You know, for a long time I've been covering the oil business, and the last 10 years or so at Platts. And when I saw prices start to move up in like late 98 for no good reason, I said, you know, there's something strange going on here. And it just got worse and worse. So when I retired in 07, I decided I'm going to write this book, and it needs to be written. So I went back and looked at some of the history of how it's actually fairly well documented how the U.S. National Security Establishment was able to use oil pricing as a weapon to bust the Soviet Union, driving prices down.
Let's talk about that. And also tell us, let's go back a little bit, way back when the Brits were discovering oil, for example, in Saudi Arabia and in the Middle East. Tell us about the thought of control. I mean, because we all know now that the push to control the Middle East during that period was aimed at controlling the oil. But let's go way back to the House of Saud, if we can, James. What was going on then?
Well, actually, let's go back to Iraq before that.
Even before that, okay.
The biggest reserves were found in Iraq in the early part of the 1900s. And even then, at that point, it was clear that there was a lot more oil being found than there was demand for in the world. And so it was at that point that the major oil companies, Shell, BP, and Standard Oil, which was the predecessor of Exxon, they actually met at a castle in Scotland, and they formed an agreement. It was called the Achnacarry Agreement, which basically divvied up the world market and would basically cement in place their market shares in perpetuity. Now, they've since all denied that they're still abiding by that, but their market shares are still about the same as they were then. Ever since then, the quintessential problem of the oil business has not been how to get oil out of the ground. It's really the problem of how to keep oil in the ground, at least enough of it so that you don't trash the price structure.
Right.
So what you've seen is the whole history of the oil business, from the time they drilled the first commercial well in Pennsylvania, what you've seen is a pattern of government-encouraged cartelistic behavior to try and prevent destructive commodity price downdrafts that would be damaging to the industry.
Did they create the market for the oil, James? You know, it was almost a flip-flop where they had the product, but they didn't have a lot of cars then. People weren't using a lot of oil. Did they decide to just create a market for the use of oil? They created this?
Well, I think it did take a while to actually make oil a commercial commodity. Of course, there had been whale oil before that. So,
yeah.
I mean, the world has a tremendous need for fuels of various kinds, and particularly liquid fuels are a very valuable commodity because you can move them around easily. You can do a lot of different stuff with them. So the market came right along with it, and they've kind of grown in lockstep.
And we've just seen what Putin is doing with natural gas out of Russia. He's basically saying, we're just going to turn the spigot.
Yeah, well, now, this gas dispute in Ukraine is very interesting because, as I pointed out in the book, the way the United States really broke the Soviet Union in the 80s was to drive down the price of crude oil, which the Russians depended on for the vast bulk of their hard currency earnings. But another leg of that program was to slow down the Russians' ability to sell natural gas into Europe. The Russians had been building a large pipeline, several pipelines, and wanted to expand them going into Europe. And the United States, A, didn't want Europe to become overly dependent on the Russians. B, didn't want the Russians to get the cash from selling that gas. And as a result, through various efforts during the Reagan administration, we actually slowed down that Russian pipeline development for a period of more than 10 years. And it took about $20 billion out of the Russians' pocket. When you add that $20 billion loss to about the $80 billion or so loss that they had back then from us driving down the price of crude, those numbers pretty much add up to exactly what Mikhail Gorbachev had to go hat in hand to borrow from the Western banks in 89 to feed the Russian people with wheat. And when he had to do that, he basically had to agree to hold his armies back from Eastern Europe when Lithuania and Poland and East Germany all got uppity. And next thing you know, Russia had lost control of Eastern Europe the Berlin Wall fell, and within a couple of years, the Soviet Union was bust.
See, I always wondered, James, why the Soviet troops didn't go wild when all those, you know, parts of the Soviet Union started splintering off into their own little countries.
Well, that was the main thing, is because of the strings attached to the loans, which he had to go to. He couldn't borrow it from the banks anymore. He had to go to governments to provide that money to feed his people. And he couldn't afford to have those loans called. Ultimately, the Soviet Union went broke. It went bust. And subsequently, Russian economists have gone back and looked at that period, and they say, yeah, this is what killed us. It was that oil price drop. That's what really wrecked the Soviet Union. And so what I did then was to go back and look and see, well, just what did our government do back in those days?
Yeah, how did they pull it off?
Well, it turns out it's not that hard to do. Yeah, it's really just a relative handful of players involved, and it could be done right out of the White House. Basically, there's a team, the National Security Council, operating out of the White House. Maybe 120 people were able to marshal efforts of other parts of the government to make it happen. And the key elements is just three things, really. The major oil companies, you get the major oil companies on board to either increase production or reduce production. In the 80s, we got them to increase production dramatically. We got the Saudis in 85 to rapidly increase their production and flood the market with oil. And then the third element is the NYMEX, the futures exchange, the New York Mercantile Exchange. What happened when the NYMEX started trading crude in 1983, there was like a barrage of selling of paper barrels, not wet barrels, but future contracts.
Right.
In other words, there was like a deluge of paper barrels thrown on the market. That further depressed the price. So the price of crude fell from what was then about $40 a barrel down to about $10. And if you adjust that for inflation, the price actually fell from like $80 a barrel down to about $15.
Jeez.
So it was a dramatically successful effort, and it proved to the guys in the White House that we can do this. In fact, we're pretty good at it. And not only did they bring the price down, but they were able to hold it down for about a decade until the Russians were finally bust. And then the price kind of bumped along through the 90s, which was a nice continued tax break for the United States. But in 98, that's when you see this hockey stick rise in prices. And what I look at in the book, I ask the question, could it be that we are waging this economic war in reverse now against the Chinese to slow them down? And there's no hard documented evidence, but there's a mountain of circumstantial evidence that points in that direction.